Okay, I'm all in.
This is the only poker show in St. Louis radio.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
With the only St. Louisan to make it to the final table of the 2008 World Series of Poker main event.
Shuffle up a deal.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
We are live in downtown St. Louis in the Lumiere Place Poker Room. I'm Paul Harris. He is Dennis Gimpy Phillips.
Hey, we can compare some stories about the doctors and everything we've been visiting in the last few days.
Dennis and I are keeping the American healthcare system alive. My voice is kind of thin tonight, so...
It's our own stimulus package. There you go.
That's it. But more importantly, what the hell did you do to your leg?
Well, I decided not to walk on it for
a while.
How does
a poker player get injured? How does that happen?
Actually, got invited out to Sunset Hills out in Edwardsville. They're having a pro-am there Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. If you guys like golf, like seeing it, there's some good quality, very young players there, guys from that are just out of college that are trying to make it onto the pro level. These guys can hit some awesome shots. I was out there with them today. I was lucky enough to do that. We were on the back nine about hole 14. We were playing. I was playing with a pro. We were eliminating one team each hole. All righty, and I'm still in. So obviously I had a good golfer with me.
Yes, you must
I guarantee
have.
It was not me that was doing this. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Anyhow, we just got eliminated because I shanked one to the left that barely stayed out of the woods. He tried to chip on, but we three-putted, so anyhow, on a par three. So we got eliminated. Everybody else is leaving. I'm walking up this hill, steep incline, everything like that. Kawam. Back of my leg felt like a golf ball hit it.
Wow.
I popped a muscle back there in it. So, yeah, that was good timing. The guy that I was with said immediately, well, tell him you did it on the first hole so you can explain these shots.
You know? That would explain the next 13 tee shots.
There you see. I had a ready-made excuse then, and, you know, oh, well.
Well, I hope you're back in shape for the World Series of Poker. It starts in 2 weeks. You're going to be okay?
I will absolutely be okay. And that's a very good point because you've got to be ready for it. There's so many little things with it on that. We have been talking around, and one of the things that I don't think a lot of people realize is some of the stuff we did at the World Series. And anybody going out there, I'll tell you this right now, it is long, it is grueling, it's hard.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it.
And, in fact, we're going to have the poker coach, Joe McGowan, join us in a few minutes. We got a great response last week, and we talked about how you can play in the early rounds of a WSOP event, whether it's a main event or something like the $1,000 stimulus special, they call it, or a $1,500 or $2,500 buy-in, all the way up to the big 10, 40, and 50K events. So we'll talk a little bit with Joe about that in a few minutes, and you'll add your own insights.
Yep.
And then later on, the guy who has been the commentator on ESPN's telecasts of the main event at the World Series of Poker and the rest of it, plus I think he's done things like the U.S. Poker Championships and the WSOP Europe and others, Norman Chad is going to join us in about 20 or 25 minutes.
Absolutely synonymous with poker.
Yeah.
If you hear Norman's voice, you think poker.
Absolutely.
There you go.
And ex-wives.
Well, okay. This is true, too. But, yeah, I think Norman would rather talk about poker.
Yes. Well, we've got a lot of things to talk about with him. Before we get to anything else, I just got to say one thing to Annie Duke.
Oh, my God.
Who came in second in the Celebrity Apprentice thing.
She won it. They just didn't realize it.
Was that a bad beat that Trump gave it
horrible.
To Joan Rivers?
Absolutely horrible. I don't think there was 10% of the people who would have done that. I don't know what he's rating, what the heck he was doing. That was just horrible.
Well, you know, actually, I don't think it was a bad beat. I think it was a cold deck. And for those of you who don't know that term,
that
a cold deck
possible.
Is when the deck is set up against you.
Yep.
It's not just that you're not catching good cards. It's when the deck is set up against you. This happens sometimes in home games and used to happen when poker was unregulated all the time. I think that's what Annie Duke ran into on Sunday night. I think Donald Trump was going to make Joan Rivers a Celebrity Apprentice no matter what happened.
I think it actually was almost a lynching party. They decided ahead of time that, you know, you're guilty, but we'll hold the trial, no problem. By the way, you are guilty. You know, so you're going to lose, but we will go ahead and have the weekly thing.
It reminds me of what a wonderful, classy player Joan was. Let's go back just a couple of weeks and hear what Joan Rivers had to say about poker pro Annie Duke. Roll it, Jason.
And your people, you give money with blood on it. I met your people in Vegas for 40 years. None of them have last names. None of them. They have cash pools. You're a poker player. A poker player. That's awesome. Beyond white trash.
Poker players are
poker
the most
players.
Awesome people poker in the world.
Poker players are trash, darling. Trash.
I am so glad that people with bad names get it, you know, like Charo or Madonna or... Wait. They aren't poker players. What industry are they in?
I don't know one poker player who's known by only one name with the possible exception of Doyle.
Yeah, well, that's because you know, he is the patriarch. He is the man.
But he doesn't just go by Doyle. Unbelievable.
Joan, you go get another facelift. Maybe it's tied a little too tight around your top now. I don't know.
Why anybody would want her as an employee or to associate with her in any way.
Can you imagine that plastic surgery mistake? Yeah, it's just who in the – can you imagine the lawsuits if you had this person running a company?
I think Heath Ledger looked better in The Dark Knight than Joan Rivers does in real life.
He had a better smile.
By the way, guess who has a deal with NBC for a new series? Joan Rivers.
You know, now, wait a minute.
Shocking,
this must have happened after it, right?
No. All right, now here's my question to you.
Okay.
I think that they may want to go to another poker player after this, or other poker players may want to step forward. Who do you think from the world of professional poker is likely to accept the invitation to go and be on the next Celebrity Apprentice?
Yeah, right. Let's see if we can start that list out. Give me about 2 weeks and I'll come up with maybe a name.
I'm going to give you one name right now.
Well, everybody knows the name you're thinking about.
Phil Hellmuth.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's just so horrible. Dad, I'm sorry. Annie Duke I've met. Annie Duke is a very good person. To be serious for half a second, that was a travesty.
Yes,
it absolutely was a travesty. And even Joan Rivers knows it's a travesty. She was a comedian. She was a comedian that night. And a very poor one.
Yeah.
But, you know, if she wants to put on some act, go back to a stage in vaudeville. That's where she started at, probably.
Now, here's the question I have for you. Is Annie Duke, because of the extreme exposure that this show got, I mean, they got huge ratings because of the Annie versus Joan battle.
Yeah.
Is Annie Duke now the most famous poker player in the world? I mean, today as we sit here?
She is way the heck up there because not only did she get the exposure, but she came off taking the high road. She came off to be the one that people respected. Nobody's going to respect Joan Rivers talking about Hitlerites and all this other crap.
You're right.
So, absolutely.
Yeah.
She took it the way she didn't take any guff, but, you know, she took the high road. She didn't get into the stupid name-calling, whatever the heck. So.
Yeah, and raised a lot of money for charity.
Absolutely
hundreds
did.
Of thousands of dollars.
I
think she did the poker community pretty proud.
I think she did, too. I my hat's off to her.
All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, the poker coach, Joe McGowan, will join us, and we'll give you a little bit more of the strategy of how to play the WSOP, which starts 2 weeks from tomorrow. This portion of the Lumiere Place Final Table on 5-9 of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com is brought to you by PokerStars, the site where you can play against Dennis Phillips.
Absolutely, and anytime you want to play against me, get on there, guys. PokerStars, the biggest site in the world, the best site in the world. You can play there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, any kind of game, any kind of level, any kind of competition. It is there. I'm telling you guys, if you want to learn how to play this game and play it the right way, go to PokerStars. They will walk you through it, they will train you, and they will put you against the guys that you need to go against to learn. And if you want to end up in Vegas, you can start out in PokerStars.
They're giving away hundreds of seats
hundreds
to the main event.
I'm sorry, we did that wrong. Thousands and thousands of seats.
Is that right?
That is correct.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. All right, so PokerStars, Dennis Phillips, part of Team PokerStars Pro, one of the sponsors of the Lumiere Place Final Table, and we'll be back right after this.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
All right, let's bring in the poker coach. Here's Joe McGowan. Hi, Joe. How are you tonight?
Hey, guys. Doing well. Glad you're both feeling a little better.
Thank you. We appreciate that very much.
Got any crutches out there? Oh, never mind.
Joe, we got great response to last week's segment with you in which we talked about strategies for playing in the World Series of Poker. A lot of our listeners have been trying to qualify, whether it was online or in live satellites or in any way that they possibly could to play in the main event or some of the smaller events out there. And last week we kind of talked about early tournament strategy. I thought today we'd talk a little bit more about middle round play, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
Well, and one thing I want to qualify when we get into this. This is kind of the way Joe and I have seen, we don't agree on everything here either. I had a couple of people talking to me and say, I don't expect you to agree with everything here. There are different ways to do it. It's like a pair of jacks. There's 20 ways to play a pair of jacks. Mm-hmm. Every one of them is wrong, but, you know, there are 20 different ways to play them. So, you know, we're going to give you our ideas. I love it if you guys send in some email questions or whatever to it so we can have a good discussion on it. And if you disagree with it, great. Tell us why. You may improve my game.
All right,
let's go.
Here's the first part of middle tournament play that I want to know because I have a lot less experience at it than the two of you. And it has to do with once antes are introduced. You've got blinds all the way through the first several levels, and maybe you've made it through 2 or 3 hours of a WSOP event. Maybe you've gone even further than that. And you get to a point where now antes are involved, and antes are adding extra money to the pot. And, Joe, I'm curious about what that does to me when I'm going to raise. And I'm usually going to be entering any kind of pot that I can. If I'm going to open the pot, I'm going to be raising. I'm going to try not to limp in, which you have taught me. But as I enter, I wonder about making the standard 3 times the big blind raise, the 3X raise as we call it, because now with all of that extra dead money in the pot from the antes, there's going to be a lot of players at the table who are going to be getting better pot odds to call with hands that have a much broader range. So what do you do? Do you change how much you raise? Do you make it 4X, 5X? Do you have to watch your range of hands? How does that affect things?
Well, I think the trend in the last couple of years has actually been instead of making a 4 times or 5 times X raise, it's actually make a smaller raise, believe it or not. And it may not seem right, but most players, a lot of the better players, they like keeping the pot very small pre-flop. They like keeping small pots. You know, they don't want to get in races for all their chips with ace-king, you know, versus queens, a standard type of race, you know, something like that. I'd rather keep the pot small pre-flop. A lot of people will call pre-flop, see the flop, those 3 cards, and then they're easy to move off their hand. The better players can move them off their hand or get a read, get a little more information. So a lot of the better players, even with the antes, you know, they'll make a 2.5 times raise. Sometimes halfway through the tournament when the antes are introduced or the antes have been around for a while, Paul, you know, a 2.5 times raise, it's enough to where, you know, you really have to think if you want to call here and, you know, play against this player. So I'm one of the players as well, pretty much, you know, unless there's an extreme case, the most I do is like a 3 times raise. You know, a lot of times, like I said, there's enough in there where that 2.5 times raise is enough where you somewhat need a hand to call. Getting ahead of myself a little bit in the later stages of the tournament, that's where it becomes more all-in poker. So the further that you go, you know, it's tough to call, you know, or make a raise with a queen jack, you know, in the later stages of tournaments because someone might go all in, you know, like at a final table. That's where it's a lot of pre-flop poker. So in the middle stages, you know, the 2.5, 3 times raise, you know, that might be enough because it gets a little more serious. You start getting involved in a couple of hands. It really could be all your chips. Early on in the tournaments, you know, you can see a couple flops if it's early for cheap for $50, you know, a small percentage of your chips, and then try to play some poker on multiple streets. So midway through, you know, I think 2.5 to 3 times is the norm with the better players trying to keep the pot small.
Well, and it multiplies, too, because if you're doing only a 2.5 time, then if you're going to make a continuation bet of 60 to 70% of the pot, your pot's smaller. So, you know, it helps carry through the other legs of the game, too. Mm-hmm. So on a flop or on a turn or something like that, you're managing that pot, you're managing your stack.
But aren't you giving some players at the table, let's put some math in here. Let's say the blinds are 200 and 400 and there's a $50 ante.
Okay.
If there were no ante, there'd only be $600 in dead money out there. But with the $50 times the 10 players, now you've got $1,100 mm-hmm. in dead money out there. If you make a 2.5 times raise on a $400 big blind, that's $1,000. You're betting less than what is in the pot there. So players who are coming in, who are looking at their hands, may be thinking to themselves, well, you know what? I'm getting 2 to 1 on my money just to call here. Isn't that going to broaden the range of hands that you're likely to get called by?
Later in a tournament, in some cases with deep stacks and everything, that may be the case. But in a lot of cases, I don't think so.
Deep
the deep stack is the big key there. If you get it, then there is a difference. But if not, you know, you had a limited amount you started with. You may be a little short of stacks. You're talking about throwing $1,000. Maybe you've only got $5,000 in front of you on that. So it's a bigger percentage of the chips you have in front of you. And then if you're going to make a continuation, you're darn near all in then. Even at a 2.5, you call that 1,000, your next move is going to be all in, or you're gone. And you can only do that once, and then you're going to be down to, you can't even do it a second time with 4,000. You're not going to call a quarter of your chips on some draw or something. You're probably going to shove. So Joe raises a very valid point. When you're getting there where it's closer to, not a shove fest, but more likely for people to be pushing in, you need to be, again, like I've harped on time and time again, aware of the chip count around the table on this thing. But raising that 2.5 is enough.
Is 2.5 the minimum you want to do it? Would you ever want to do just a 2X, a min raise, Joe?
No, there's plenty of times you want to do that. And I think what you want is you never want to be predictable. You could be predictable that you always do a 2.5, whether you have a big hand or a small hand. That can kind of disguise your hand. They can't tell if you have 3-4 offsuit and you're making a play, you know, or if you have pocket kings. But you could mix it up. You could come in, you know, up front with who knows what type of hand just for a min raise, just two times, to try to disguise your hand, and you know, maybe you have pocket fives and you don't really want to commit a lot of chips with a small pocket pair, so you make it a min raise, which might scare some people. Geez, what has he got? You know, kings, you know, that it just seems funny. Let me throw my hand away. I don't want to challenge this guy from up front, you know, instead of limping. You know, a lot of times if you limp from up front, you know, they're not really afraid that you have a huge hand. They make a good-sized raise, and if you don't have a huge hand, likely you throw it away. So sometimes a min raise, you know, is enough for deception to throw people off. So time and again, you could do a min raise. And certainly time and again, you know, as Dennis said earlier, you could do a 5 or, you know, a 4 time. There's no exact way. And sometimes a very subtle thing that you might see at the table, whether it's a read or whose big blind it is that's been folding, you know, almost all their big blinds, they're not a defender of the blinds, you know, that might shape the size of the bet that you make. And I think you always want to find the perfect size bet on every street. And, you know, that comes into all the factors of poker, you know, the chips that they have, the chip stacks that they have, when is the bubble coming, how much are the antes, how much are the blinds, what are they likely to call, what do they think of me, the image, the whole thing. So it does always change. But for the most part, you know, I'm in the group that doesn't like to put a lot of chips in there and almost commit myself to playing a pot, you know, 5x, you know, I definitely don't do a lot of those, and I don't see a lot of the better players doing a lot of those, Paul. You know, I think they keep it 2.5, 3x, try to keep it small, try to get it heads up or you know, two-way action, three-way action, and see the flop and then play from there.
Well, I'm going to go a little bit beyond this, too, on something. I have seen people that can get very predictable, and if they want you in the hand, they have pocket kings, they'll only make a mid-raise. If they have ace-king and they don't like playing ace-king, they make the 4-raise, and they can be very predictable on that. The better players aren't. However, when you're playing out there and you play for 8 hours or 10 hours or 12 hours or 14 hours, I picked up a lot of my money from 10 o'clock at night on. And I picked it up because people started becoming more predictable, started becoming easier to read as they got tired, started becoming sloppy with their play. And you could tell because they were getting into patterns and not even realizing they were getting into patterns on it. So, you know, it's something to be aware of, and it's another one of those things that these long days can be. So, you know, beware of falling into patterns, do exactly what Joe was saying, and vary your play.
All right, that brings up another question, which is after you've played for hours and hours and hours and people have been eliminated and you're lucky enough to continue to play in there 8 or 10 hours into the first day, let's say, and maybe even make it to the second day, tables have been changed and you might have been moved and other people might have been moved to your table, and all that time you spent learning the betting patterns of the people around you and getting tells on them is now wasted because you got to start all over again with 6 or 7 new guys at a new table, or maybe it's 9 new guys that you've got to learn about. Joe, talk a little bit about how you handle that as you go through a tournament.
Well, without any question at all, you want to very quietly step away from the table, ask the floor, you know, or look at the breaking order. They usually have it listed somewhere. Many times it's right on the main screen. You know, there's multiple screens all over. Sometimes there's 2 or 3 events going at the same time. But you could look at it there, and there's a breaking order of the table. You might find that you're more towards, you know, a table that's going to break probably never in the first day. You might find that you're one of the first tables. You're in the tent, or you're not in the Amazon room. You're out at the Buzio's restaurant. They have like 10 tables out there, and those are the first tables to break perhaps. if that's the case, you kind of make your play, you know, based upon that, knowing that you're probably going to spend 3 hours with these guys at this table. So, you know, it's not going to be a long, steady thing where you're trying to be patient. You're really trying to develop an image, and you're trying to play off of that. If you know you're going to be there for 13 hours, you might be very, very careful. You might actually, you know, throttle back a little bit if it's a deeper stacked event and you have more chips to try to build up an image and to try to pick off their images and their tells and then use that midway through the tournament. Dennis also brought up a point, you know, later in the day, just expanding on what he said, that can be a spot where it's a little bit like a bubble effect. Many, many people, they want to make it to day two. That's a huge accomplishment for them. They've never
Very
made it to day
point.
Two in a tournament. So they put it on lockdown in the last 2 hours. They'll hardly play a hand. So that is a spot that's a great spot midway through a tournament where you can pick up a lot more chips. If you can identify which players they are, you know, knowing your image, knowing the chips, you know, who maybe you can raise, what big blinds you can steal, and, you know, maybe a good continuation bet after the flop will do the trick, you know, coupled with a read. I don't like blind aggression, although sometimes you do that just based on a little betting pattern. But that's also another good spot you can pick up some chips.
Now, does that mean that on the beginning of day two, they're more likely to play looser because, woohoo, at least I made it through day one, and you got to be careful of that?
I would say so, just like after the bubble.
Yeah.
Once that bubble breaks, people go crazy. Not as much on day two, but the bubble is the most craziest spot. Once that hits, then it goes bananas. And the guy that wouldn't, you know, play jacks pre-flop, you know, he's willing to go all in with ace-jack, you know, after the bubble. But day two, it's not nearly like that, but, you know, the end of each day, typically there is a good percentage. It's not a high percentage, but there is a good percentage of players that do put it on lockdown and won't really play many hands at all.
And I think you will notice, not maybe to the extent you would on the bubble or something like that, but there is a little bit of that rebound the next day where people get a little euphoric. I've just made it here. I'm fresh. I had a good night's sleep. I'm raring to go. I've just beat half the people in the field.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on day two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's go, guys.
Yeah.
And they do get a little more slap happy on some of their plays.
See, what I'd be worried about, Joe, at the end of day one was a guy who was kind of short-stacked, who may be thinking to himself, you know what, I'm going to have to just push with pretty much anything because the last thing I want to do is make it to day two and play one hand. To have to come back on the second day and just play one or maybe one round
right.
of that.
And well, that's also, Paul, that's also with the dinner break. You get the same exact mentality
right.
with a certain percentage of players. They don't want to go on an hour-and-a-half dinner break and come back, you know, all in on
the
their next
hand
anyways. So, yeah, they really look for a spot, so they either go all in and double up, you know, or go home, and then don't have to come back for the dinner break. And you certainly don't want to have to come back for day two. So that is, again, you know, talking about the World Series and these events, you know, for the players that are going to go out there that are new, those are things for sure that you want to look for and you want to try to identify, and it helps you make your decisions, just like the reads and the tells and all that. You factor in all this information. And you might even be able to talk to the guy a little bit. I don't know exactly what that rule is going to be this year about talking to the players and all that, and we'll see. But you might try to you know, be careful and not get a penalty on that if that's the rule this year, which I hope it isn't.
Well, they do have the Jamie Gold rule in effect.
Yeah, but that was
in effect
last year somewhat, right?
Yeah.
No, this year, I mean, they've had Jamie Gold that had that effect, Havad with his yelling, they had an effect. The gentleman that pushed at my table there on when we were getting down to about 27, you know, and then pulled the chips back.
Yes.
We're going to be changing that ruling a little bit. There are some subtle changes on it, and Joe's right. There may be a change, too, about the vocalizing on it,
yeah.
which I hope they don't do.
So I think of all the rules, that might be the one that might be, you know, maybe a slap on the wrist, I would hope, first, and then if you abused it. But I think that's really a gray area, and I'll be really interested in see what happens because, to me, you know, a lot of times that original rule of talking to the players, that was more for collusion, more for, you know, we're trying to get it to the bubble, how can you not call? Or, hey, you have to call because we want to knock him out. Let's have all of us call because it's the short stacked, and then, you know, everybody makes the money. That's collusion, and that's where you don't want people talking, colluding against another player. But, you know, to me, if you do like Daniel and Jamie, I think that's good poker. That's my humble opinion, and I hope that rule doesn't stay in effect if that's the case. I think that makes the game much more boring and not nearly as fun and not as skillful. So that's my humble opinion there. I love the rule, if that's the rule with the guy that was at Dennis's table that pushed his chips in and then didn't push him in. And I mean, I thought that was a horrible ruling. And yes. I think that's an angle shot that should be eliminated. I love that rule.
Yeah, that one has been, well, will be changed is what they've told me on that.
Good.
Already. I went in talking to them. But anyhow, I'm sure there'll be some we need to find out. And again, at the beginning of the tournament, they will tell us of any rule changes. It's right there for anybody that wants to plan a talk. All of this stuff that we've been talking about are just little things that really can add up, about a dinner break, about late at night, about the different breaking order of the tables and such. Kind of touching upon that, and again, I'm jumping around a little bit, but we were talking the other day about some of the habits you get in when you're out there, your eating habits, your drinking habits, your everything like that. And I can tell you from personal experience some of the mistakes that people made out there. I watched a couple of people on dinner breaks. They would go out and they'd eat this nice, huge steak and all this other stuff and then come back, and they're sitting there, they've got 6 more hours of poker to play. You know,
on a really full stomach.
On a really full stomach that they've been straining and you know, their mind is fatigued a little bit. Again, I made a lot of money after 10 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
I made a lot of money.
What did you do
times.
On the dinner break?
I slept.
What?
I slept. I would have somebody go get a sandwich, a light meal. I had a room right there in the Rio. I would run up to the room, and I would crash.
How long is the dinner break usually?
90 about, minutes.
Oh, so you get an hour and a half.
Yep.
So you can get up there. It'll take you 15 minutes to get up there, maybe 15 minutes to get back down.
Yep.
Because it is a long way.
It is that.
From any room at the Rio
yes.
to the Amazon room. You need to know that if you've never been out
yes,
there. It is
absolutely.
A huge place, and the Amazon room. You're walking, and you think, well, I'm going to get there soon, and you're not. You're going to still have to keep walking.
Mm-hmm.
So 15 minutes up to the room, 15 minutes back. You zoned out for an hour?
I absolutely did. Absolutely
hey, Paul.
Did.
And Paul, this,
yeah?
is, this is one of the many differences with me and Dennis. You know, if I'm on break, I'm so amped up and half nervous and excited. You know, I'm like wired and can't do anything. I look like I just drank 7 Red Bulls or something, you know. But Dennis can be like, okay, time to shut down. I'm going to sleep for, you know, what do I have? An hour and a half? All right, I'm going to sleep for X amount of minutes. Boom, he's out like a light. You know, I get knocked out of a tournament. Boom. I'm in the fetal position for 3 days. You know, he's back playing tournament or a cash game or something. You know,
what do you do, Joe, then, during a tournament when it comes to eating and drinking and what do you do on breaks?
Well, I think you guys know I've come from a golf background, and I was never a good tournament player. I was never really a great golfer. But teaching a lot of golf and trying to help some of the better players in golf, you know, I think it could be similar. I just think a light, sensible meal, and it really does make a difference. You know, the last thing you want to do is go to the buffet, you know, and just stuff yourself food and feel lousy and, you know, have some problems after you eat. You know, you just want some light meals. I like having an energy bar in my pocket. At the World Series, they have a big, big cage they put in the Amazon room every year. Last year, the safety deposit boxes didn't sell out. I think they're either $25 for the 6 weeks, excuse me. Even if you're only there for a weekend, for $25, it might be worth it. You can kind of use it as a mini locker, you know, if you don't have any space there, which hardly anybody does. You can put some stuff in there, some energy bars, different
yep.
things. You can come and go and do your thing, which I do. But, you know, that part... It's important. You just want to use your head. You want to be sensible with that. And, you know, I don't want to overdo it with that stuff. But
I think all of these things we're saying, though, really do make a difference. Catching sleep when you can, eating in you know, nice regular amounts and the right items, too.
Yeah.
Don't eat some
right.
heavy... type meal is just going to bloat you.
Because the rounds are going to be 2 hours long. If you're drinking a lot of bottles of water during the tournament,
this is true.
You're going to be looking up at that clock going 30 minutes to go, oh, man, I got to go. Oh, man, I got to go.
There was a guy from Italy on day two that I was sitting with that would sit there and not take a drink until there was 15 minutes left, and they'd guzzle a whole bottle. I don't know how he timed his kidney, I don't know, but he had it down pat. It was amazing.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS. And KFNS.com. Our podcast, of course, available on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. He's Dennis Phillips. I'm Paul Harris. Joe McGowan is the poker coach. We'll take a break and come right back. And Norman Chad, who you've heard doing commentary on poker telecasts on ESPN for years now, will join us in just a moment here on 590 of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.
In just 2 short years, World Series of Poker champ Dennis Phillips has earned over $4.5 million because Dennis knows when to hold a great deal. That's why Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room is his game room superstore. Hurry to Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room now for factory closeout deals on poker tables, craps tables, blackjack tables, 3-in-1 casino tables, and accessories. Plus, get Amini's closeout deals on complete game room packages, sale priced from just $1,995. Right now, Brunswick Billiard Game Room Suites are thousands off, and American-made pool tables are just $995. Hurry to Amini's now for blowout deals on leather sectionals, area rugs, bars, bar stools, video arcade games, and home theater seating. Hold your deal interest-free with 2-year layaway. So take a tip from Dennis. Get your great deal today at Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room, Highway 40 and Boone's Crossing in Chesterfield Valley, the home of the Copper Dome Amini's.
Tuesday night is poker night on 590 The Fan KFNS. So let's go back live to Lumiere Place Casino Poker Room with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris.
This portion of the show brought to you by Shomi's Bar and Grill.
I have to admit, I went to Shomi's just a couple of days ago.
Mm-hmm.
Went down there to eat the wings, mm-hmm. had a nice sandwich, went with some friends. I'll be back. These wings are excellent, guys. I was down there at the one down in, where's it at? I was at a couple of different ones here. Oh, over down there, St. Clair, right off of the highway there, mm-hmm. on it. Went into it. A guy by the name of Joel Hahn is the manager down there. I met and talked with him for a while. And by the way, hi, Natalie. Nice, her waiting on me.
Mm-hmm.
She had those pink shorts. Never mind, I won't go there. Anyhow, Shomi's. I had the wings. I had a nice sandwich.
You can go there.
Yeah, I know. You're staring at me real well now.
There are quite a few people who go there because of the pink shorts the waitresses are wearing.
I'm telling you, though, this was it was a nice, relaxing thing. You sit there. You can talk poker. They had a poker up here on one TV. They had a baseball game on the other one.
Mm-hmm.
We were sitting around talking, and I did not realize the way that Shomi's has been expanding. I thought there was only the half a dozen that are around the St. Louis area.
Mm-hmm.
They're up to about a dozen of them now because they got them over in Indiana. They've got them scattered around everywhere, and they're making that available for other people. You can actually now franchise a Shomi's, and if you're interested on that, you can go to talk to Ron Coates, and his number is 618-444-4447. 618-444-4447. You can buy one, or if you have the vision,
mm-hmm.
you can buy several.
Mm-hmm.
But they are looking to franchise. They're going to make you a heck of a deal. Let me tell you something. If you can put together a restaurant with those kind of people, that kind of personality, those kind of waitresses, and that kind of food,
mm-hmm.
you're going to make some money.
Yeah, it's called Shomi's, one of the sponsors of the Lumiere Place Final Table. Now let's introduce our guest, who you've heard doing poker commentary on ESPN for years, and of course on all of the hours of the coverage of the main event of the World Series of Poker. Here is Norman Chad. Hi, Norman. How are you tonight?
I'm fine, and I'm wearing pink shorts right now, Dennis, if it matters to you.
Well, let me tell you, Paul just winked. So, you know, you ought to be glad you're not in the room here with us. Let me tell you that.
Norman, we're both fans of your work on ESPN, and we know you were out there in November when Dennis and the rest of the November 9 were playing the final table. I saw you and Lon kind of up there on the stands doing your introduction, and then you disappeared. And I know that you guys had a heck of a time turning things around so that it could be on the air 2 days later. And I'm just curious, from a broadcaster's standpoint, did you go behind the scenes somewhere and then watch all 13 hours of the final table, as those of us who were in Dennis's group had to do?
Yeah, normally we would watch the entire final table of any event that we're broadcasting. This was a unique situation because of the turnaround time and what we were going to have to broadcast. Lon and I actually had to leave when it got down to, I think, four-handed because it was going too late into the night, and we're going to have to start voicing the broadcast at 6 or 7 in the morning for that day's airing. So we did not see the final four-handed when it went down to four-handed down
wow.
to two-handed. We didn't see any of that. And then when it stopped and went to heads-up, we also did not see the heads-up because we were voicing the telecast.
Well, I got a question for you because I don't know how the heck you do this. How do you edit this? I mean, do you try to look towards some pro playing early? Do you line and look at the major hands? Do you try to look at when the people bust out? I mean,
are you developing storylines
yeah.
before the tournament even starts?
Well, first of all, Lon and I, we don't, you know, the producers edit the broadcast. we actually, you know, don't see the 60-minute product until they're done doing it. But I'm there with them when I see what they're doing. And you just mentioned a lot of things they're looking at. You know, there's only so many hands they can get into a 1 or 2 hour broadcast. They're looking for, you know, hands that are interesting. Obviously, hands where people are knocked out, you have to get in. And then you're looking for a storyline, particularly earlier in the main event. If you're following a particular pro or a particular amateur who you've developed a story on, you're going to do more hands with that person. But, you know, you're looking for the big hands, the big moments, and, of course, conflict at the table and conversation at the table.
And you're looking for any opportunity to say Alan Cunningham.
I'm looking for guys. You know, I'm generally looking for anything that has nothing to do with analyzing poker, since I am not a particularly good hold'em player. I don't play hold'em that often, and generally my view of how to do it is that it's a game. Let's have fun with it. So I'm looking for stuff around the table, whether it's people wearing unusual clothes, saying unusual things, just anything that's different from just the everyday poker. That's what I'm looking for.
Well, I got a question for you, because I've been asked this thing more than 100. I have no idea how many times. What are your thoughts about this break, that 117-day break, as a commentator, and then maybe how you think it affected the players?
Yeah, the break, it's great for the marketing of the World Series of Poker. It's great for poker in general. It created more of a buzz. More people in the mainstream got to know who the players were and were more interested in the result, and the ratings reflected that. I would have been against doing it if it was up to me. I wouldn't like stopping any event for 2 days. You wouldn't stop a football game with 2 minutes left and say, let's come back 3 days later and play the final 2 minutes, you know, with the score 17-16. So from a general competitive standpoint and a sporting standpoint, I wouldn't have done it. And I'd also just be worried about the long layoff and anything that can happen bizarre in the world of poker between the time of the getting to the final table and then actually playing the final table.
Which is true.
Yeah, you know, the ratings for the final table this year in November were 47% higher than they were the previous year.
Yeah.
Of course, those of us in the Team Dennis camp, we don't put that to anyone's credit except the 350 people who dressed up like Dennis Phillips.
Well, actually, if Dennis hadn't brought that many people, the ratings would have gone up another tenth of a point because they'd be home watching.
See, I was detrimental to it. See, there you go. Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. All right. Well, I'm going to keep moving on and get away from the crowd out here like Paul wants to talk about. But, hey, I've noticed now this year it looks like ESPN is only going to be covering No Limit Hold'em. They're not going to be doing the horse in that or any kind of Omaha or anything. I mean, I got two questions for you. Number one, why do you think they're concentrating just on No Limit Hold'em? And what about the future of poker on TV? Are they ever going to get into any of the games? Can you see maybe a heads up or with the pros playing with their own money or something else that's going to be popular on TV?
Well, anything's possible. From I can't speak for ESPN, but that their decision, they prefer showing No Limit Hold'em. It's the easiest from a television standpoint to easily translate to a casual viewer. So it takes the least amount of thinking as a viewer to follow Hold'em as opposed to Omaha or Stud or any other game you can think of. So that's why one of the reasons they concentrate on Hold'em. I have always been an advocate of showing all the games. I have argued that we should show all the games. We did briefly a few years ago, and they've gotten away from it for whatever reason. I think the ratings are usually pretty much the same. And I'm just, for the future of poker, I just think it's healthy for poker if people are watching and playing all the games instead of just playing No Limit Hold'em. I fear for the day, and I walk into a lot of casinos now where that's the only thing you can find. It's hard to find certain Limit Hold'em. It's hard to find Omaha or Stud. So I just think for the long-term future of poker, we're better off if we're watching and playing all the games. Unfortunately, on TV, almost all you see right now is No Limit Hold'em.
What do you play, Norman?
I play everything but No Limit Hold'em. I play in a card room a couple times a week in Los Angeles, and I play a mixed game, which is Omaha 8 and Stud 8, and sometimes I just play one or the other. I would play Deuce to 7 when it's spread. I'd play Raz. I'd play Stud. It's weird, when I grew up, I played social poker, and then I played more serious, higher stakes poker, that wasn't in a card room. And in both cases, none of us played Hold'em. I mean, it's social poker, you're playing a lot of wild card games. And then even when I was playing like a $10, $10 or $20 anytime game, it was essentially a mixed game. It was dealer's choice. We played 6 or 8 different games, and we hardly ever played Hold'em. The point is that we played everything. And I think a lot of people out there still play everything. And I think it's healthiest for poker in terms of bringing people in and keeping them in that we keep playing everything.
But you can't convince a card room to play seven card stud, high spade in the hole, splits the pot.
Oh yeah, roll your own Black Mariah. Let's keep it going. Come on.
You know, actually, the card rooms aren't even licensed. That, you know, they can't even spread certain games unless depending on the state. Like in California, you know, certain casinos will not. You know, Badoogie is like all the rage, high stakes at the largest casino in Los Angeles, but it isn't spread at other casinos. They don't have the regulation or the get-go to go ahead to do it. So yeah, I don't think we'll be playing. I think you were describing Chicago, right there, high hand splits with low spade in the hole.
I said you can make. We played some wild games in college. Oh my gosh!
Absolutely.
It was basically if you don't have five of a kind, you lose.
Norman, it seems as we watch you on the poker telecast with Lon McCarron that you're actually rooting for a pro to get there. And, of course, no pro has won the main event since Chris Ferguson did it some 8 years ago. Why do you think that is?
Well, it's just a question of numbers. I mean, the pros are going to be better than the non-pros, but when you have a field of anywhere between 5 and 10,000, just statistically it's hard for you to get through all of that. So, event, you know, we're talking about anywhere from, I don't know, 300 to 500 pros against 5,000 semi-pros or amateurs. So just in tournament poker, there's so much more luck involved than in cash poker. And with a field that large, you know, you got to avoid bad luck, as Dennis knows, time and again, just to make it to the final table. It's a miracle. And so, pros make it to the final table. A pro will win again. An established pro will win again. Just the odds are stacked against it numerically in any given year. So it's only going to happen once every 5 or 10 years.
Well, what about this 40K? Because there's not going to be many amateurs on that thing. I'm really looking forward to this one. This ought to be some tremendous poker, I think.
Yeah, that is a terrific event for this year, and that is one that we are televising. And I'm sorry to say we're not televising the 50,000 horse this year, which is turned into sort of the de facto Pros World Championship. Yeah, you're going to get the same type of field. It might be a little larger because some people, you got these online phenoms who are playing mixed games and are playing higher stakes online now, so they might want to dip a toe into that. But you should have a pretty small elite field, similar to the 50,000 horse, where you got maybe 150 or 200 players, and it should just be just a terrific group of guys to watch play.
Norman, what do you think poker on TV does to the way people play poker?
It changes a lot. I mean, I remember back to when we first started, Eric Seidel literally refusing to show his hole cards. He didn't want people to know how he played. And what happens is, first of all, because it's established certain players as obviously celebrities or stars, others playing against them play differently against those big name players. So it's tough when you're a big name player. You got people coming at you at all angles. And then from a more amateur standpoint, when you watch what you see on television, you tend to want to ape it when you're playing in your local casino or playing in a tournament, and that's usually not a good idea. It's sort of like, don't try this at home. Whatever they're trying, you know, the pros understand the right spot to pick, the right player to do it against. And we're also seeing things out of context on television. You'll see an incredible
Absolutely.
Bluff or an incredible play or somebody do something with, you know, deuce seven off suited. But there's history to that, and you don't know the history and why the person was able to do what they did. So a lot of mistakes are obviously going to be made because people imitate what they see on television, and it's really hard to translate to your own game. You're not as talented or skilled in doing what some of the pros do.
I think that's very good advice there. Yeah,
and I think it makes people play a lot looser because they say, well, this guy won with Jack 6. I can win with Jack 6.
Yeah, you're supposed to play any two cards, right?
No question. And actually the one other element is that when you get on the television and you know you're on a final table, people will play differently just because they know they're on television. I mean, you know, you want to play the Jack 6 and show somebody that you had nothing, you got air on the flop, and you bluffed Eric Lindgren out of a pot. You know, something you can talk about for the next 25 years. So people will play differently when they're on television just so they can, you know, see if they can get away with the bluff of the century.
Well, got one last thing. We've been trying to, we get a lot of emails, a lot of calls, a lot of this and that about, you know, how do you play out there? How do you do it? Do you have any advice for the players going out there? Any common mistakes you see? Anything you do pregame? Anything like that, maybe, because you've got a lot of experience out there on it.
Yeah, you know, I watch, you know, I don't play at the main event, and I don't play much tournament hold'em, but I watch different people, and different approaches work for different people. In terms of style of play, you know, the aggressive killer be killed works for a lot of the young players. They accumulate a lot of chips in a hurry and put themselves in a position to do damage. While some other people play, you know, Phil Hellmuth's ABC poker, which is very tight early on. you know, the philosophy that you can, you know, you can't win the thing on day one, but you can obviously be knocked out on day one. So he plays very conservatively. People can bet him off hands. He'll only play premium hands early on and won't get involved with most of his chips early on. Something that a couple of my friends do is they come late. It's, you know, Phil Hellmuth does it partially because he's just trying to be stylish and wants to make an entrance. But again,
right.
You know, nothing great can really happen to you in the first 2 or 3 hours. Something bad can, you know, you can get pocket aces cracked and lose all your chips in one hand. So I know it's such a long grind day one that I know people who, you know, a couple of my friends, and they did pretty well by it. They like skipped the first level. They just came in after the first two-hour level, were blinded off, not that many chips out of the starting stack of 20,000, and this year it's going to be 30,000. And, you know, it made it a shorter day for them. They weren't under pressure, under the gun, and, you know, just they made fewer mistakes by coming in late. And the only other thing I would say is again, just it's hard to play outside of your own comfort level. Don't try to do stuff that you haven't done before. Play whatever's naturally it comes to you naturally. If you tend to be aggressive, if you tend to be tight aggressive, you got to do pretty much what you know, and just hope you get very, 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 very lucky to keep moving on past day one.
Norman Chad, who does the commentary on the poker telecasts on ESPN, and also does those very funny heads—I guess you call them heads-up features—the part of the nuts where you've taken shots from Daniel Negreanu in street hockey. You had you've interviewed Eric Lindgren while he was trying to make some foul shots. You had Hellmuth throwing frisbees at you from across the pond, and I think one of them caught you right where it counts.
That still hurts.
Do you have in your mind what you want to do already for this year?
They haven't gotten commitments yet. We do about a half a dozen of them, and I just saw a list of ideas last week, and they were all, you know, just very funny and very different. But they don't have commitments yet. But again, it just involves getting a well-known player, doing something that they like to do, and then asking them questions. Just trying to get a little bit of their personality and also just seeing them do some physical activity. Like, I bowled against Johnny Chan. He wanted to bet me. And, I mean, he was a hustler in Houston before he was a poker player. He used to hustle people in bowling. And he's routinely going to bowl over 200. And I've bowled over 200 like three times in my life. And he crushed me. And he hadn't bowled in 8 years. And, you know, he says, let's go $50 a pin or $200 a game. I'm like, what are you, nuts? Yeah, I'm not going to sit down and play poker against you, and I know I'm not going to stand up and bowl against you. And he crushed me. I think it was like 185 to 190 to 140 something.
It's usually a bad idea to get involved with somebody who proposes the bet.
Yeah, they could see me coming from a mile away, as they say, and I always do have the little fish hat on, no matter what the endeavor is. So, yeah, he was trying to make a quick buck.
Well, Norman, we appreciate your time today, and we look forward to seeing not only you on the telecast later this year, but maybe we'll run into you in the hallways of the Rio at the World Series of Poker in a couple of weeks.
I'm booking my rooms early because I want to get there ahead of Dennis's people, and I don't want to have a room next to like the bathroom or the elevator.
Thanks, Norman. We appreciate it.
I'll bring you a hat, Norman. How's that?
Norman Chad joining us here at the Lumiere Place Final. 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com. This portion of the show is brought to you by American Image Salon and Spa. Hey, if you forgot that 2 days ago was Mother's Day, I've got a way for you to make it up to Mom or for any of the ladies in your life. It's the head-to-toe spa package at American Image. For $125, the lady in your life will get a spa facial, an express pedicure, and a mini Aveda hand and foot release. Call American Image Salon and Spa at 314-878-5210 or go to their website online at AmericanImageSalon.com. It's the head-to-toe spa package, $125, but if you mention that you heard about it from Dennis and Paul at the Lumiere Place Final Table, they'll take $25 off. You don't have to tell the lady in your life that you saved 20%, $100 for you, and of course, you can get a gift certificate perfect for any occasion. You got a lady in your life who's graduating this year, or you got a wedding coming up, or maybe you're getting married and you want to do something for the bridesmaids in your party. They got a lot of stuff, an entire list of services you can find on the website, AmericanImageSalon.com, or call 878-5210. It's American Image Salon and Spa, where they're making a difference one image at a time. We'll be right back on 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
If you wear gloves at work, you've got to know the Glove Guy. 314-509-5241 or glovesforyou.com. The Glove Guy is Bill Hyatt, who sells gloves all over the country from his base right here in St. Louis. The Glove Guy has over 400 different styles of gloves and safety wear available to you. Brown jersey gloves, PVC dotted gloves, single leather palm gloves, Kevlar gloves, leather driver gloves, and more chemical resistant gloves, latex gloves, vinyl gloves, string knit gloves, palm coated gloves, and he carries mechanics gloves too. Don't buy your gloves one pair at a time. The Glove Guy sells gloves by the dozen and by the case. See everything the Glove Guy sells on his website, gloves4u.com. That's gloves, the number 4YOU.com. If you don't see it there, the Glove Guy can help you find it. That's the Glove Guy, Bill Hyatt, 314-509-5241 or gloves4u.com.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
Before they sit down to play tonight, they're talking poker with you right now. Live from Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel in downtown St. Louis, here are Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the PPA, the Poker Players Alliance, the nonprofit membership organization of online and offline poker players who are fighting for the right of poker players everywhere. We got some good news last week when Barney Frank, the congressman from Massachusetts, finally introduced the legislation that would allow U.S.-based companies to obtain licenses and operate federally regulated online gambling sites. In other words, regulate it and tax it.
Yes.
The companies like PokerStars and the others have said they'd be more than happy to do this. The Internet Gambling Regulation Consumer Protection and Enforcement Act, they always got to have a long name on these things,
yeah, there you go,
has been introduced. It is probably going to be stuck in committee for a while, but I would think that with the way Congress is set up these days and the way the Obama administration has been talking, we may have a chance of getting this thing passed.
The way revenue right now,
The way you can help it get passed is by joining the PPA.
Absolutely.
Because they will lobby for you. It only costs you about $20. And if you're a poker player, this is a group you need to be a member of. Go to PPA.org to find out more about the Poker Players Alliance. And now our final guest of the night.
Yeah, Daniel, are you on the line?
I am.
Hey, Dan. Want to introduce this guy. He's a new friend of mine. I met him over at Monte Carlo. A young player, first major event. He was over there. I think then he went to Rome afterwards of that. But anyhow,
right.
Just wanted to get your quick thoughts. When you sat down at that first table and looked at who was at the table with you, maybe you can tell us who was there and what your first thoughts
this
were.
This is at the EPT in Monte
EPT
Carlo,
EPT
the big PokerStars event there?
The major one.
Who was at your table, Daniel?
Well, first was kind of a surprise. The guy to my left was Andrew Chen, who I don't think has made too many TV appearances, but he is a pretty well-known professional player. And funnily enough, he had asked me where I'd found cheap beer in Monte Carlo about, 2 hours earlier online, because, you're paying, 7-8 euros a beer whenever you're down there, and we figured out you could go to a grocery store and get them for one. But I had Chen to my left. I had, I think, Alex Gomez directly to my right. And then, of course, Dennis Phillips was two seats to my right with an empty seat in between him and Gomez. And that empty seat was shortly filled by Michael Tereniak, who was another big Russian pro. I think there was only one, poor player at that table that I can remember. It was a pretty scary situation.
Well, I know that the guy was sitting to my right, high-fived over here for the floor, and came over and said, "When does our table break?"
Yeah.
That was the first thing he did. But anyhow, Daniel's a very, very solid player. It was his first one. He got over there at PokerStars. He won an event at PokerStars to get over there, I believe. And actually, you made a good showing of yourself there. You played very well at that table, first time being with some of these guys. So pat yourself on the back.
Thank you.
Okay?
I appreciate that.
Well, I expect to see you at more of them. Just next time, make sure that I still have the aces and you have the kings, okay?
Is that what happened? You knocked him out?
I did knock him out.
One of these times I might hit a king, but I'd actually like to do maybe one or two events a year. I've got a family and a lot of time to, take care of all those things, but I think one or two a year would be, pretty reasonable for me to take care of.
you're also keeping yourself pretty busy by multi-tabling. When we called a couple of hours ago, we heard that you couldn't come to the phone because you were playing 24 sit-and-goes online or something like that.
Yep, that's exactly right. I was putting in a session.
Sweet. Well, I tell you what, Daniel, you played very well over there. I expect you to see more of them. Any advice for the novice player the first time somebody goes to one of these?
Well, aside from getting a better seat draw, I'd say practice live poker. I took a trip to Vegas. It was, you know, one of my first live experiences before I had gone to Monte Carlo, and it really helped me a lot just to get a feel for how things are going. If it was my first time actually playing, you know, at a casino, it would have been a lot more difficult. I know I was a little too quiet one time whenever I wanted to make a raise, or, you know, just little things like that. Are kind of a big thing that make you feel more comfortable. And I'd say, you know, for anybody who's going out for their first time, get a little bit of experience at a local casino or go to Vegas or something before going overseas.
Well, Dennis wanted to introduce you to the world. Daniel Wallace, maybe a name that we should watch as the years go by. And thank you for your time tonight. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Daniel. I'm glad to join you.
See you around.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Paul Harris and Dennis Phillips online at thechipleader.com and every Tuesday at 7 on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.